Welcome back to the Mike Malloy program. Brad Friedman, your friendly citizen, investigative blogger, journalist, troublemaker, muckraker, all-around swell fellow from bradblog.com, drafted into duty here for one more hour tonight, and I'll be back again Monday in for Mike Malloy, who is in Seattle at our affiliate AM 1090 up there in Seattle for the Progressive Voices Conference with a whole bunch of other progressive folks, good progressive folks from the media, Randy Rhodes and Pap Antonio and so forth. So tell them all I said hello if you're up there in Seattle over the weekend for this great forum that I wish I was at, but I am not. I am here, and I'm delighted to be here. Bob Fetrakis was kind enough to hold over here for just another minute or two to answer some questions on this, on these new developments in the 2004, yes, you heard me right, 2004 election fraud case out of Ohio that continues to this day. There has been a release of information, this deposition with Mike Connell, the Republican IT guru who created the election reporting system in Ohio back in 2004, at the same time that he was creating and running the George Bush website, the GWB.com email site where millions of emails are said to have disappeared, all of that stuff. He was all involved in that, and after he gave his deposition, a month later, he went down in a plane crash in Ohio that he was piloting by himself, and he died. And now the deposition that Bob Fetrakis and Cliff Arnebeck, the lead attorney, were able to get on with Mike Connell has now finally been unsealed. That and the schematic from the Ohio Secretary of State's office showing that on election night, boy, who didn't have access to that system, Bob? The Ohio Secretary of State?
Neutral IT guys who are professionals.
Yeah,
like Bob Mangum, who was sent home. The state's key IT guy who's never been sent home. It's told to go home at 9 p.m. by the private partisan followers of Bush and Blackwell.
He was told on election night.
Yes.
He's the IT guy for the state, and 9 p.m. on election, presidential election night, they say, oh, thanks, Bob. We'll see you later. You're off the clock.
You've always had to be here to 3, 4 in the morning. Why don't you take the night off and let the private partisan followers of Bush, operating under the co-chair of the Bush-Cheney reelection campaign, Ken Blackwell, take over for you?
And incredibly, what the Secretary of State's office has said about these computer systems that went down in Ohio and all of a sudden came up at the server down in Tennessee where they were running, I think the Swift boat was run out of there too, wasn't it? The Swift boat website?
Yes, absolutely. They were all on the same pile of servers in the basement of the old Pioneer Bank building in Chattanooga, Tennessee.
And the theory when you guys found out about this happening in the middle of the night, moving the servers down there, was that, oh, that was in case there was so much traffic in Ohio, this would be the backup system. If it went down in Ohio, it would be mirrored, essentially. If it failed in Ohio, it would be all of a sudden be mirrored and work out of Tennessee. But in this deposition that's now been unsealed, so you can finally talk about it, Mike Connell says that was not the case, correct?
Correct. Both he and Bob Mangum said that there wasn't supposed to be a mirror-over situation if it failed. And Mangum's absolutely certain that, you know, I mean, they were using supercomputers here in Ohio. There was no scenario which provided a so-called denial of service. So the broader question is, who made that decision to outsource Ohio's vote to hardcore Republican operatives, a company owned by Mercer Reynolds, the finance guy for Bush and Cheney 04, and Jeff Aberbeck, this born-again Amway-tied person who now has taken over Connell's spot at GovTech.
And that allows those results that were shown on the website on election night in Ohio, that ended up determining the presidency. And you got Mike Connell in this deposition saying, under oath, to the best of my knowledge, it was not a failover case scenario, or it was not a failover situation. So the question as to why it went down, why the system moved down to Tennessee, I suspect you have an answer for that, Bob.
Well, but let me refer to you to a Republican, Steve Spoonamore, who Cliff Hartbeck emailed. You know, this is one of the foremost cyber experts on Earth. He works for, you know, government agencies. He works for the biggest banks to stop credit card fraud. And he goes, yeah, it wasn't designed as a mere over system to prevent failure. It was designed as a kingpin. It was designed to rip the vote off, to insert data.
And to be clear here, what we saw on that on election night, that was not, these were not the vote tabulators. These were the results of what, theoretically, what the vote tabulators told us. So in this scenario, they would have had to, if in fact they changed the results that people saw on the website, they would then have to go back and change the tabulators or the ballots themselves in case anybody ever looked at those tabulators and ballots, because it would not match up with the website results. Do I understand that correctly, Bob?
Yeah, but sadly, 59 counties accidentally destroyed all or most of their ballots. I think you've reported on this as well as the Free Press, right? You remember a large craft of coffee took out 20,000 of those ballots in Holmes County. Why they were making coffee in the voter vault, which is supposed to be secured by at least two locks and separate keys owned by both parties, remains a mystery.
And ruined a lot of ballots. Yeah, because they were ordered, a federal judge, because of this case, said you have to hang on to those ballots in all 88 counties, and it was 50, was it 56 or 59 counties?
It ended up 56 originally, but it turned out to be 59 destroyed all or part, including Montgomery County, which argued that their letter of destroying ballots trumped a federal judge's court order.
So now the key witness, one of the key witnesses in the case here, Mike Connell, the IT guru who created the system, he dies in a plane crash under odd circumstances. So the case moves forward. You get permission from the judge in Ohio to subpoena Karl Rove, which you do last year. You give him that subpoena. You serve him to come in for a deposition to get Karl Rove under oath on the record, perhaps for the first time. And when does that happen? Where's that deposition, Bob?
Well, that's specifically related to what we felt was an ongoing visible conspiracy in Ohio involving Rove in the Chamber of Commerce.
Ah.
Since that passed, let's just say I talked to Cliff during break. All roads lead to Rove. And in due course, you know, Rove will be deposed. As we take discovery in this case, the question is, you know, whether we go after Averbeck first. But, look, the real kingpin in all of this, the name that comes up, the name that holds Mike Connell together and Averbeck together and Barry Jackson together, is Karl Rove, the man who showed up in Warren County to thank them after they called a level 10 Homeland Security alert, which only happens when Bin Laden is in the neighborhood, and diverted the ballots down there in the southwest county.
They diverted the ballots and they locked down the counting room so that for the first time the public couldn't come in and watch the counting, the media couldn't come in and watch the counting, because they declared an emergency that they said the FBI told them there was a terrorist threat. And since nobody in the FBI has said, oh, I didn't talk to anybody in Monroe County, Ohio. So, oh, I'm sorry, Warren County, Ohio, Warren County lockdown. So the questions persist there. So was that subpoena, was that quashed in Washington and now has to be re, help me out here, Bob, the Rove subpoena?
Well, with those circumstances not being the immediacy problem, in the due course of discovery, as we reopen this case and this filing, I think does so very nicely, we'll get the Rove. The question is simply how quick and how many lawyers, because he has, you know, massive legions of lawyers that jump out of the woodwork to say this man can't be under oath. And we suspect that is either because he won't remember anything, he'll have to take the fifth, or he'll have to come up with some of those incredible lies, like exit polls don't count, or, Bush got 14,000 extra votes in Warren, Ohio, because Republican women hid in the afternoon only and didn't want to talk to exit pollers.
Yeah, it doesn't make a lot of sense still. So you're going to continue on this case, I suspect, clearly. Well, we'll see if Rove ever is taken in under oath. But you can read more about this at freepress.org. I've got the links to Bob's latest story with the filings, the deposition of Mike Spoonamore at bradblog.com. I do have a caller who has a quick question for you.
Sure.
Bob, you want to take a quick call here?
Yeah, I'd love to.
All right. Nancy from Akron, Ohio. Welcome to the Mike Malloy Show. I have a quick question for Bob Petrakis.
Yes. I'm checking. There was an article maybe 4 to 6 weeks ago in our local paper with regard to our beloved Cuyahoga County, indicating, and the headline to it was almost bragging, that they had sent out 180,000 letters and they'd only gotten 80,000 responses, and wasn't this wonderful? They took 100 names off the list.
Voter caging. Yes. Are you familiar with that story, Bob? Thanks for the call, Nancy. Are you familiar with that story?
Well, if you go to freepress.org, between the 2004 and 2008 election, are you ready for this number? They purged 1.25 million voters in Ohio.
Mm-hmm.
At least a million of those who are still eligible to vote had moved. 80% of them still lived in the county, could go down to the Board of Election and cast a vote. This has been ongoing. Between 2000 and 2004, they purged 305,000 voters in Ohio in three cities, Toledo, Cleveland, and Cincinnati, almost all in the inner city, 80, 90% Democrats. And worse than that, Brad, as you well know, they're now bringing in the private proprietary poll books.
Yeah.
Diebold, of course, before the 2004 election, these partisans whose CEO Walden O'Dell pledged to deliver Ohio's electoral vote to George Bush, who raised hundreds of thousands of dollars for Bush and was hanging out at the ranch, his company accidentally purged 10,000 voters.
Yes, I remember.
In Cleveland.
And in Cleveland, and I remember the reading the emails from the folks who worked at Diebold saying, oops, we just dropped thousands of voters when we were putting together this voter registration system. We just purged thousands of voters, and Ken Blackwell won't even help us. Won't even help us, Diebold. Nancy, thanks. I appreciate that call. This is only going to get worse, I suspect, although I was impressed, Bob, to see John Husted, the new Republican. They got, once again, another Republican Secretary of State out there in Ohio, actually say no to this photo ID law that they're looking to pass in Ohio, even though he's a Republican. He said, no, I didn't sign up to knock people off the voting rolls. I thought that was hopeful. Do you share that same hope?
Yeah, I do. And partly, the major newspapers in Ohio are many things, primarily owned by, rich Republicans. But they have a fundamental faith in that people should vote. And the Cincinnati Inquirer, the Columbus Dispatch, all of them were sort of, why do we have the most repressive, draconian ID law in America? So I think Husted, in part, represents a almost lost tradition in the era of Karl Rove, right? That is that elections should be held fairly and everyone has a right to vote.
That's unique for the state of Ohio from a Republican, but I'll take it. Hey, Bob, I got to run here. I really appreciate you hanging on this extra time here tonight. I appreciate all the work that you continue to do all of these years later, and I suspect you're going to have to do next year, whether you like it or not, in Ohio at freepress.org. Keep an eye on Petrakis. If it happens in Ohio, as it usually does, he's the guy to go to. Thanks, Bob. Really appreciate
all
it,
right,
my friend.
And I'm a big fan of Brand Blog. Thank you.
Thank you, brother. You're very kind. All right. When we come back, your calls, 877-520-1150 on this topic or anything else you want to talk about. The debt ceiling nonsense. The Republican terrorists who are holding the country hostage, the actual terrorists who we learned tonight apparently killed some 80 people, some kids at this youth camp out in Norway. Of course, he was blonde and native, so it couldn't have been terrorism. It was just he was crazy, right? That's what they tell us. Anything you want to talk about, 877-520-1150. 877-520-1150. Get in now. Don't wait. Brad in from Molloy. Welcome back to the Mike Molloy Show, 26 minutes after the hour. Brad Friedman of BradBlog.com in for Mike. Your call straight ahead, 877-520-1150. I ran a little bit long there, so we're going to have to take a quick break here, 877-520-1150. Before we go here, speaking of crazy, Haboob Hubbub. The dictionary defines a haboob as a thick dust storm that blows in the deserts. Arizonans, however, define a haboob as a jihadist harbinger of Muslim infiltration. Hearing local weathermen call Arizona's recent massive dust storm by a term they've used for decades, one Arizona resident said, "I am insulted that local TV news crews are now calling this kind of a storm a haboob. How do they think our soldiers feel coming back to Arizona and hearing some Middle Eastern term?" That was an actual quote. "If this is suddenly the guiding principle," writes Think Progress, "on acceptable vocabulary, Arizonans should eye words like algebra, pajamas, khaki, coffee, giraffe, lemon, orange, mattress, zero, and alcohol with suspicion, because they are all Arab words." Have we gone crazy? Answer, yes. Your calls right after this. Brad in for Mike. Better recognize your brothers. Everyone you meet.
Well, they're building a gallows outside my cell, and I've got 25 minutes to go, and the whole town's waiting just to hear me yell. I got 24 minutes to go.
That's just about what we have. 24 minutes to go here on the Mike Molloy Show. It is 34 minutes after the hour. Brad Friedman of BradBlog.com in for Mike Molloy. Taking some of your calls, 877-520-1150. The phone lines are jammed, so let's get right to it. And anything you want to talk about is just fine by me, though be as quick as you can with your question. Let's go to Gretchen in Claremont, California. Hey, Gretchen, welcome to the Mike Molloy Show.
Hello.
Hello.
Well, I'm calling you. I think you're on a delay, and I'm here in L.A.
Oh, you're in
L.A.
Yeah, you may be hearing the first hour of the show. How am I doing back there?
Well, I think you're doing great.
Oh, good.
I have to tell you that today Obama sold us out.
Yeah.
There is absolutely no excuses that can be made for this guy now. I'm sorry. He's gone.
Yeah.
Many of us are just not going to vote for him anymore or any Dems that support this ridiculous.
Now, how did he sell you out, Gretchen?
You know, in the first place, he should never have accepted the deficits along with raising the debt ceiling. Those are two different issues. He should have said, look, this is automatic. It's been automatic for years. You either are going to help me raise the debt ceiling, or I'm going to use the 14th Amendment, and I'm going to do it, and then you take the heat for it. I'll let the courts come after me later.
Now, I'm playing devil's advocate here, but, I presume you're talking about the $650 billion in cuts to Medicare, Medicaid, and Social Security that were planned in this deal, supposedly, with John Boehner that has now fallen through since Boehner has walked out. Does he not come out better? Does Obama not come out looking better on the other side, showing that he was willing and able to do these things, but the Republicans were obstinate?
No, I think Obama comes out as a sellout because, first of all, they should not have been on the table.
Yeah.
Social Security has a trust fund of $2.6
trillion
unless he continues to give the payroll tax cuts, which go into, you know, taking away money from the trust fund.
Yeah.
No, Obama's a sellout.
Right.
He should never have put those things on the table.
All right. Thanks, Gretchen. I appreciate your call very much.
Thank you.
You bet. And let's go to, on the similar topic here, Jeremy in Huntington Beach, California. Are you listening to that first hour, too, I'm guessing, Jeremy?
I am, yes. Okay. It's the right-wing's way. I mean, K-Talk, let's face it, they must be owned by right-wing people, and they filibuster liberal talk from 3 to 8. So anyway, yeah, I think Obama may just be a conservative Trojan horse. I mean,
wow.
The biggest right-wing Republican in the world could never have gotten the deal that he's putting out there. I mean, the cuts that he's actually offered up are so repulsive, even to the most, you know, right-wing voter. I mean, they're all for Medicare and Social Security, you know. These jackasses at the Tea Party, keep your government hands off my Medicare. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I think that you people need to be real, real wary of that, you know. I mean,
you people? Who?
I don't know, just the left, the supposed left, you know.
Wait, hang on, Jeremy. You people, meaning the supposed left, should be worried about Obama and we should throw him out?
I consider myself like, people call me left. I thought I was conservative, but, you know.
Who'd you vote for in 2008?
Nader,
okay.
Yeah. So okay. It looks to me like a game of good cop, bad cop, you know what I mean, where Obama's like, they pretend fight. I mean, give me a break, man. How it's bad enough that the right wing licks, you know, corporate boots, but for God's sake, I mean, if you listen to the voters, I mean, they were really, most of the actual voters are angry at Obama because, for one thing, he didn't end the war.
Yeah.
He gets punished by the right and the left for compromising. The last caller is 100% correct.
Right.
There is no excuse for this. Zero.
Okay.
We need to raise taxes on the rich and tell Republicans to go screw themselves for once.
Thanks, Jeremy.
They will respect him.
I hear you, brother. I appreciate the call. I really do. And I got to move on because I got a lot of folks I'm going to try to get to. Thank you, sir. Appreciate your thoughts. I should also add Rosalind. We'll just say Rosalind B. She sent me an email because I had called this an Arafat moment for the Republicans, giving up the best deal that they would ever have, the way Arafat did, in my opinion, back in the late 90s with Bill Clinton. And Rosalind disagrees. She says, Brad, why do you keep on saying it was an Arafat moment? Let's be clear. The Israelis have never, I repeat, never given the Palestinians anything even approaching a fair deal. I wish you would stop saying that. The Palestinians have been shafted by the Israelis time after time. I wonder, do you agree with the proposition that Palestine should be declared a sovereign nation? The vote will be coming up pretty soon. I assume she means a vote on them being a sovereign nation. And, yes, of course, they should. Absolutely. So there you go. Rosalind disagrees with me. 877-520-1150. Let's keep flying through these calls. Excuse me. Whitney in Kaplan, Louisiana. Whitney, welcome to the Mike Malloy Show.
Hi. So now's Louisiana by people here because it is kind of a loser place sometimes. But no, I love it.
Okay.
Anyway, I was part of the voter protection team in Dayton, Ohio. I flew in there. I was living in Pennsylvania at the time and went over there. And let me just tell you, we had a district that was 6 precincts. I worked 5 with an attorney who flew in from California. And it was mostly black, all the precincts, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Not one person in line was there to vote for George Bush. There were waiting, you know, it was the usual, you know, poor district, let's give them 3 machines and let them wait.
Yeah.
There were a lot of us that stood in line for people so they could go to the bathroom, et cetera. All right, so I go back to my hotel that night. There was one black fellow. This was kind of funny. He was in a business suit, and this was in a quick district where I guess it was a little bit, you know, they had a little bit more money in the district. He snuck in and snuck out, would not stop and talk with us or anything. We were doing kind of exit polling things.
Well, he snuck in to vote and yeah, got out. Okay.
I guess he was. He probably was the one that voted for Bush. Anyway, so I go back to the hotel that night and watch the results in that particular district, and I forget what it was, you know. Supposedly, it was 65-45 for Kerry.
Right.
There is no freaking way it was 65-45. And that was one of the ones that came in late.
So it should have been, you're saying it should have been a lot higher for Kerry than 65-45?
Yeah.
Thanks, Whitney. I appreciate it. Yeah, I mean, I think one of the ways that if they were shaving off votes, as Bob Fitrakis certainly alleges, as there is a lot of evidence to suggest that they did. If they did, the easiest thing to do is do it in the Democratic districts. I mean, if John Kerry won by a million votes in Cuyahoga County, who's going to notice if he won by, if they change it so that he won by 900,000 votes in Cuyahoga County? Because
right.
He still won there, so who's going to think, and people tend to look at the Republican counties. That's the ones you have to worry about. I don't know. The place where the two top election officials were sent to jail for gaming the recount was Cuyahoga County, the bluest county, Cleveland, in all of Ohio. So, hey, Whitney.
Well, I have one more thing to add.
Quickly.
At least 20% of the people were not on the rolls that were registered, and so they had to do
provisional.
One of those ballots. Yeah.
Yeah, and J. Kenneth Blackwell threw out something like 70% of them.
Yeah.
Pay attention, people. You don't have to just vote. You got to go, and you got to fight, and you got to protect.
There.
You know, Whitney. You know what it's like.
Right.
Thanks for the call.
Keep up the fight.
Thank you, Whitney. Thanks for the call and for getting out there and doing your part at that poll. Really appreciate it. Let's fly over to Chuck in Roseburg. Where is it here? There we go. Chuck in Roseburg, Oregon. Welcome to the Mike Malloy, sir. What's on your mind?
Well, thank you, Brad.
I'd like
to talk about future voting. Maybe we could have the day off with pay.
Yeah.
I know people are rolling their eyes now. And paper and ink. Let's just get back to the government supplies the paper and the ink. You put your mark on the paper, and let's have a traditional thing of it.
Wow. So something you mean you can actually, citizens could oversee, and we could. Here's the thing. Remember this, Chuck. Paper and ink, yes. Absolutely, no question about it. That said, it ain't just getting the paper and the ink that you got to worry about. You got to worry about how those are counted. And if you watch what happened up in Wisconsin recently in the Wisconsin Supreme Court election, it's great to have paper and pen for your vote. It's a must for your ballot. But then you have to count it and count it in front of the people, not secretly inside a computer where it cannot be overseen, but in front of the people at the polls on election night, with the results posted at the precincts before those votes move anywhere. 100% transparency. Thanks.
Exactly.
Thanks, Chuck. I appreciate the call, sir. You bet. Let's go to Bouquet. Back to Obama here in Los Angeles also. Ma in L.A. Welcome to the Mike Malloy Show, Ma.
Yes. How you doing?
I'm all right.
Okay. What I wanted to say is, it's called good cop, bad cop.
Yeah.
With Obama and them and the Republicans. What they do is they both working for the same boss.
Yeah.
So what they do.
Who's
is
the boss?
They
who's,
run up
who's,
the,
who's the boss?
The insurance companies and the big corporations.
Okay.
They both work for the same boss.
All right.
But they play us like they're not working for the same people. But what they're going to do is they're going to run up a debt and say, big debt, big debt. Cut the poor people. Next year, they're going to still have that big debt. And they're going to cut the poor people. Next month, they're going to still have a big debt,
mm-hmm.
and they're going to keep continuing. And we're going to be here all Obama's presidency continuing to cut from the poor people.
people.
I hear you, brother, and thanks for making that point and making some noise. Appreciate it, Ma. Hang in there, my friend. You got a good show ahead of you if you keep listening out there on K-Talk. It's going to be a good one. All right, let me go to 877-520-1150 if you want to get in just a few more minutes. Ron in Prescott. It's not Prescott. It's Prescott, and I know this because I was just there a week or two ago doing some camping. It's lovely up there in Prescott. Ron, welcome to the Mike Malloy Show, sir.
Good evening, Brad. Since we know that Bush lost the 2000 election and the 2004 election due to election fraud, he got in to the White House. Well, we know that members of the GOP were behind that. Now, the question is,
yeah,
is it possible that members of the GOP or people in the government could hire terrorists to perpetrate terrorist acts such as Oklahoma City or 9/11?
Of course they could, Ron, but boy, are you pulling together a lot of disparately connected or not connected dots. But I hear you, and I thank you for the call, and I've got to get to a break. So appreciate it, Ron. Take care up there, and give us a shout another time. You're listening to Brad Friedman. In for Mike Malloy, 877-520-1150. If you want to get in and connect some dots, I'd love to hear from you if we have time. Brad, in for Malloy. One more section ahead.
Say it's only a paper moon, sailing over a cardboard sea, but it wouldn't be make-believe if you believed in me.
My thanks tonight to my guests, Bob Petrakis and David Dayan. Of course, to Tony Sorrentino, the world's best engineer from K-Talk AM 1150 here. Thank you, Tony. My producer, Desi Doyen, and of course, For Earth in the chat room, the bradblog.com chat room. And naturally, Mike and Kathy Malloy for allowing me to be here tonight. And again, with you next Monday, when I think we might, I'm not sure, we might have Robert Scheer Monday. He's good. If you don't know him, tune in. Also, if you're listening on MikeMalloy.com, please, please stay tuned for Head On with Bob Kincaid, our good friend there. And let's see, do we have 877-520-1150 if you want to try to get in here? We will do that. See, I had all of this crazy hysterical right-wing stuff that I can't do. You know, along the lines of that Haboob in Arizona. Maybe on Monday. We'll see. And I can't do it, of course, because of all our breaking news tonight with the president and Boehner walking out on the boner, walking out on the... All right, what else do I have? Any other business I need to do here? I thanked everybody in the chat room. I thanked everybody. That's it. Oh, tonight, if you missed any portion of the broadcast this evening, and if you are not a Mike Malloy podcast subscriber, you should be. However, if you're not, we'll let you off the hook this one time, as I'll post the archives of tonight's show late night tonight at bradblog.com. All right, quickly, let's see if I can get in the rest of these calls or close to it. Trejo, it's our old friend, lady cab driver, once again from Los Angeles. Hey, Tracy, welcome back to the Mike Malloy Show.
Hey, Brad, baby, how you doing?
I'm all right, baby. How are you?
I'm doing great. I just had to tell you so you can get a quick laugh.
All right.
About
and it's
got to
be a quick one because, of course, we're... All right,
because,
go.
See, you know, I heard about all the things that he said about Debbie Wasserman Schultz.
Yeah.
And I heard about what he did to Nicole Sandler.
Yeah.
And all the things he did in the military. And so...
Well, and
I
so for anybody who... Hey, so for people who didn't, he called Debbie Wasserman Schultz all kinds of terrible names. She's a congresswoman. And he helped Nicole Sandler essentially get arrested or something at an event down there. Nicole, of course, our good friend from RadioOrNot.com, who you should tune into. Anyway, so yes, you didn't know who he was, and
didn't know who he was. So yeah. I listened to all these horrible things that he did, and I'm like, oh my God, what a horrible bastard!
Yeah.
And so then I heard on I guess Randy's show the other day when he was talking about I'm tired of people calling me an Oreo, and I'm like. Oh my God! He's black.
Who called him an Oreo?
He said that people call.
calling him an Oreo and a Uncle Tom and all this. And I'm like, wait a second.
Well, Uncle Tom, okay, but Oreo, yeah, go ahead.
I'm like, oh, my God, wait a second, hold on. So I went on to the internet machine called a computer.
Yeah.
And I'm like, so I typed in his name, and I'm like, oh, my God, he's a black man. Jesus Christ.
Oh, you
I had no idea
that
the man was black.
Yeah.
You know, it's one of those things that when black people watch television and they watch the news and they hear about some horrible crime being committed or committed, and we're like, please don't let him be black. Please don't let him be black. You know, I never have to worry about usually worrying about that kind of stuff when you talk about Republicans.
Yeah.
Please, you know, I don't usually have to say, please don't let him be black. Please don't let him be black.
So you're not, because we all know you're black because you posted your photo over on the Twitters or something. So he's not exactly making you proud, is he?
No, not so much. I thought you'd get a laugh out of that because, like I said, I tell people all the time I'm new to, you know, watching stuff.
I can't believe you didn't know, Tracy.
I didn't know.
And you didn't know even when you heard him. Your black dar is terrible. Get to work on that.
I know. I have killer rape gaydar. Like, I know about Marcus Bachman.
I know your black dar is way off.
Dar is way off, and I'm sorry. I had no idea.
I love you, Tracy. I got to run because I want to see if I can get in one more call here, if possible. Hang on here because I know Des wanted to talk to you. All right. Tim in Riverside, I'm going to give you exactly 10 seconds, and maybe I'll get to Chris, too. What's on your mind, Tim? Quick.
Thank you, Brad. Social Security is paid for. I'm 60 years old. I've paid in all my life.
Yep. It ain't.
So how can they justify robbing it?
Yep. No, because they don't give a damn. They don't give a damn about you. They want to rob you any way they can. Any way they can rob you blind. It's completely solvent for another 25 years. You paid into it. They sniff at it as an entitlement, as if you're so, please. Thanks, Tim. I appreciate the call. Let me get to Chris here if I can. Can I? Chris, 10 seconds. What's your point in Bethel, Maine?
I want to make sure that it started on your show. I think that the left should start to discuss the Tea Party in terms of domestic terrorism. A 20% minority of the population that, you know, basically threatens global financial instability to get its way is nothing more than, you know, a transparently illegitimate, you know, Democrat.
Thanks, Chris. I got to go. We'll see you guys next week. Keep it lit, America. See you at bradblog.com.